Hi, everyone. Thank you for downloading the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. I wanted to just drop in here and remind you that I will be releasing weekly episodes until this craziness in the world ends. Not ends, but, you know, until we resolve it. Thank you very much for listening. I do appreciate it. If you could just take a moment, if you do care so, head on over and leave us a review anywhere you can do. It costs nothing, and it really means a lot. Also, share with your friends. If you have a friend who's really into Little House on the Prairie, you might have heard of that TV show. Just shoot it over to them. We truly would appreciate it. Thank you so much. And without further ado, here you go. The newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. Walnut Grove is a place to be. To Walnut Grovecast. My name is Mark, and I will one day make an intro that's halfway decent. So, again, you're listening to Walnut Grovecast. I have a very special guest today. We have Paris Brown, a fellow podcaster, and I think just Little House fan, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come on here, Paris. How are you?
I'm great, Mark. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I really love the fact that you reached out to me and we kind of, I think we hit it off through email, and I think that you kind of get the show and pretty modern person, I guess, you know, and watching Little House in today's world is just, it's kind of magical in a lot of ways.
It is. And, you know, there's so many lenses, you know, from which to draw upon to watch the show. The lens of having watched it as a child, mm-hmm. and, you know, and a different lens as an adult, the serious parts, the humor, it's something that you can watch over and over and not get tired of.
And one of the things that I'm not getting tired of these days is true crime podcasts, and you happen to have one. And I just want to mention it, if that's all right. I know it's on a hiatus at the moment. You're finishing up your PhD, and which is awesome. It's like during this whole crisis, you're like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get my PhD.
Which I don't know was actually the smartest move.
You got to get a t-shirt that says, you know, I went through the coronavirus pandemic and I got a PhD at the end.
And all I got was this PhD.
$600,000 worth of. No. So, your podcast is called, and I've shared it just for the title, okay? Immediately, I just thought, all right, I love the show, and I know what kind of show it's going to be, and you really, really hit the nail on the head, and I just really love the title, which is Class A Felons, B Films, and C Cups. It's just so funny and raunchy, and it's great. But it's not raunchy, you know what I mean? It's just really, really good.
Right, yeah, sure. Yeah, I wanted the name to stand out because, as you know, there are so many true crime podcasts out there right now.
Too many. We just launched one. Kim Lair and I are working on Unsolved Mysteries Rewind, which has been well received, believe it or not, where we review Unsolved Mysteries. Everybody watched that, right? With Robert Stack.
Well, I believe it's well received. I loved that show.
But yeah, to stand out is impossible in the world of podcasting in general, right?
Sure.
And I certainly know that just from all of the different shows that I do. And one of the number one reasons why this particular podcast, Walnut Grove, even exists, because I couldn't believe that there was such a lack of interest in the podcasting world for this this really semi-perfect show. Semi-perfect.
That's the most semi-perfect description of it I've ever heard.
You know, I like to say something nice, but then sprinkle it with a little salt.
Oh, I mean, that's the way it works with Little House on the Prairie, or Little H on the P, as I like to call it.
That is so funny, too. Like, it doesn't roll off the tongue, but when you said that, I'm like, all right, it's funny. You know, but that's what you called it when you were little, right?
No, actually.
No, I missed that.
I didn't. I actually first heard that so I used to work in law enforcement, you know, as a 911 dispatcher, and one of my coworkers, we discovered our mutual love of Little House, and she's the one that I first heard that from. She called it Little H and the P, and I just burst out laughing. And there wasn't much to laugh about, you know, as a 911 dispatcher.
And
I thought, oh, I love that. And but that was about 10 years ago, and it's just stuck with me ever since.
There's something really cute about it. Maybe that's why I thought it was a kid's type thing.
Yeah, I have to credit her with that. She's funny. She has such a great sense of humor, and we would spend, you know, the hours that we weren't receiving 911 calls, we would spend discussing Little House on the Prairie.
You know, that's really where this whole show came from. It sounds like you guys did a virtual version of it beforehand. I do credit Chris Hassler, who kind of started this podcast with me. When him and I worked together in like 1998, back in the 20th century, we would talk about, hey, we want to do a show online. And we had the whole concept of a podcast. We just didn't have the, I guess, know-how to create the infrastructure that podcasting was needed to move forward. But we did have this idea of doing a show, which I'm sure would not have been that great. But nonetheless, we are doing an episode from 1978. This would have been about a week before Halloween, actually.
Right, October 23rd.
Yeah. I like to look at the dates that these episodes are aired, because I like to think about, you know, well, what are you thinking? This is a weird show. I mean, this is a weird episode to have a week before Halloween, don't you think? I just don't think it doesn't really fit that well. The Halloween world.
I do, and I neglected to look up which episode follows this.
This
and
is
how
it's Harriet's Happenings. It's such a Halloween episode.
I also I neglected to look up, like, you know, how these episodes were distanced, you know, how much time was there in between each episode.
It was a week. It was a weekly airing. For the most part, you know, I'm assuming as you approach Christmas time, you know, you start kind of breaking it up because there's all of a sudden Snoopy specials and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And
Thanksgiving. So Harry's Happenings then was the Halloween episode, right?
I mean, the night before Halloween.
Right.
That's hilarious. But, it's just one of those things where I think maybe it's a modern concept to align a television show topic with the actual holiday.
I think so. I don't think it was done as often back then.
Yeah, but, you know, they did have Christmas episodes.
True. But, I mean, there's only so much. Well, no, I think there's endless possibilities for Halloween episodes on the prairie. But, you know, Halloween on the prairie. But, you know, maybe Michael Landon wasn't all that into it.
No, they had a Halloween episode.
They had the one with Albert, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then they had another one. Yeah. They had the one where Laura thought she saw Mrs. Olsen's decapitated head or something.
Yeah, that one's really good. We covered, I forget the title of that one, but that one actually has relatively decent cinematography going on because you have different lighting, you have makeup going on. Very fun.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, but that's a good one.
But we're talking about a very underrated show. And for whatever reason, we're going to call it Fagin, which I think is a terrible title for this particular episode.
Oh, I have a lot to say about that title.
You know, we're going to learn where it came from. But this is really the struggle between an adopted son and the relationship with a father. And I don't know. There's something missing in that title. Maybe not. I mean, maybe I'm reading too much into it.
No, I think you're absolutely correct. And it's such an obscure reference. I mean, it would have been pretty obscure in 1978, and it's certainly obscure now. So yeah, I feel like this was such a poignant episode. At least it ends, on a very sweet note.
Oh,
And I
spoiler
think,
alert.
yeah, that's true.
It's Little House after all, and I mean, who knows where this one's going?
Yeah, but I
And
think.
I don't know if I fully love the end of this episode.
Well,
I'm going to criticize it.
oh, I'm definitely going to criticize it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think there was a lesson learned here. Not too
I
much of
agree.
one, except for keeping your mouth shut.
I agree.
You don't talk about your feelings. All right, so let's set this up. Pa comes rolling in with his wagon, and he's just giggly, and I think they have a little bit of money at this point, right? They're throwing around a little cash on
Definitely.
things.
And I was wondering, it was this pause one good season? I don't know.
Well,
It's so confusing.
there's
And
no
also,
tornado.
right, there's no tornado, but there's a whole lot of dead brown grass everywhere. I mean, it must have been California brush fire season.
Yeah, this is like Simi Valley in like 98 degrees. Don't water it. We want it brown.
Exactly. So I'm wondering, where this great crop or whatever came from, because he does seem to have some, he does seem to be rolling in some cash all of a sudden.
Well, there's this other theory about combining Breaking Bad and Little House. No, I'm just kidding. Crystal meth. Yeah.
I was gonna say, you piqued my interest just by saying
That would be the thing. And watching Breaking Bad, we mentioned it very briefly before. I would say that Walter White started out as very much kind of a Charles Ingalls. Super nice guy. Had an awful car. Maybe not. I have to think about that one. There may be no correlation between them. But nonetheless, let's set this up. Let's hear what Pa has to say.
Where's Albert?
In the barn.
Okay.
He comes in, he has a calf. And in his wagon. So I'm just gonna let this play a little bit.
Hey, Albert! Come on out here. Come on, take a look at what I got in the back of the wagon.
Albert could not be more scrawny, by the way.
Oh, which will come into play. Well,
Yeah.
sorry, spoiler alert. It'll come into play later. Nothing makes sense about this episode.
No.
And also, Albert, he emerges in his crowning glory, that like almost impossibly perfectly shaped helmet hairdo, right?
Yes.
That, but so many boys in the like post-bicentennial era had this like George Washington helmet hairdo.
This was Matthew Labrador was really walking around with this mop on his head, and he has a good head of hair, I'll say it.
He really does.
I'll hand it to him.
And right. I mean, my older brothers too, I remember during this era, they had that same hair, the
Yeah.
big helmet with the ends just barely flipped out.
Yeah, I have this, how like you would take photographs with people and like those, you get the strip of photographs, they have them still, like photo booths.
Yes.
I have one where I'm like, I don't know, six or something like this, and I'm like, holy crap, like, don't I get haircuts when I was a kid? And it was kind of like that. It was like, what the?
It was a style.
Yeah, it was Long Island,
Yeah.
1975 or whatever it was. No,
Yeah.
how old? I guess it would have been 1979. About this
I
time.
was going to
Might have been this day. All right.
Isn't it beautiful? Oh, it sure is.
Delicious. I'm waiting for
Look at those eyes.
that.
I got him for you, Albert.
For me?
That's right. Said you wanted to be a farmer, didn't you?
Yes, sir, I did.
It's a lot more to farming than just raising crops. Got to learn about livestock, too. You're going to raise this young.
You hear that, Laura? I did raise him. Yeah, I heard.
Now we see immediately Laura's like, well, you didn't get me anything, no licorice, nothing.
She's so pissed off, but she's at this point she's handling it surprisingly well.
And but you know, I'm sorry, go on.
I thought that didn't Albert always want to be a doctor, or is he just lying to Pa about wanting to follow in Pa's plow tracks?
This is really early on, though. This is where, you know, they're so early in their relationship that I don't even think they really understood where this character would end up going.
True. Yeah.
I don't know if he even mentioned that yet. I mean, I'd have to go back, I guess.
Right.
That sounds like work. I'm not going to do that. But I'm going to say that I bet you that he hasn't had the opportunity to really have that conversation yet. Maybe.
Right.
Think you can handle it?
Oh, you bet I can. Don't worry, Mr. Ingalls. I'll raise you a cow to be proud of.
And that is the telltale sign of, I think, where this whole episode is going. The Mr. Ingalls.
Yeah, the writers are really working overtime to set up this storyline.
And, you know, I don't know why I keep bringing this up lately on every time I talk to somebody about adoption. You know, adoption is like such a nice thing that, you know, more than just a nice thing, but it's probably the nicest thing that you can really do for somebody and provide them with a family, really. I mean, something that they just don't have. And especially back then where Albert was living under the stairs, it'd be tough.
Right. Yeah. And adoption becomes such a like heavy topic or like overarching theme throughout the series, which of course, you know, in real life, they never adopt, you know, the Ingalls never adopted anybody, but it becomes, and I'm sure this has to do with, you know, Michael Landon's own background, but it becomes such, you know,
a message,
prominent, a very prominent message that he sort of returns to over and over again throughout the series.
And the reason why I'm bringing it up so much lately is because on Unsolved Mysteries Rewind, it seems to be in almost every episode, you know, having something to do with finding a loved one who adopted a child or, you know, or gave up a child and all of these things. It's always so sad.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good, like, that's actually working as a great tie together of those two series. That
works
better than your Breaking Bad analogy.
Well,
but also, you know, like there's so much like during the pre-internet days, like it's so difficult to actually find people that you've lost, right?
Yeah, and they just passed a law recently. This has to be no more than 6 months ago, where I think when a child becomes 18 or older, then the paperwork is released where they can learn all about their where they came from, which I think is important for a number of reasons, but especially something like medically.
Absolutely.
Or you never know, you could be related to a rich uncle that you just never knew you had. And he's just waiting to throw you a few million.
Wasn't that a little H on the P storyline?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. but that was Confederate money, which.
That's right. It was worthless.
But if you held on to it as a collectible, it is worth something nowadays. So
true. Yep.
Weird how things kind of go in these cycles. You hold on to it long enough.
Yeah, I'll probably just have to wait another 150 years.
That's all.
If you just have some patience.
Yeah, seriously. That's something that the Ingalls will never be. They've just never been really. They've never excelled at having patience.
No.
So here he is. He's very, very happy. He's getting this wonderful gift. And
first lesson, Albert. Male calves very rarely grow up to be cows.
Time to have the
talk.
Oh, yeah.
Then I won't expect it to get much milk.
No, I'm afraid.
Much.
Did not.
That was.
Did you get him on?
What? Not
that
much.
That was like a weird, like, off-color joke for Little H on the P.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of these little things. Or maybe we're just reading far into it. Which,
yeah.
Who knows?
Tie in water. I'll fix up a stall in a barn.
Okay. Mr. Ingalls?
Yeah?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, I don't know if I've ever heard Laura say thank you so sincerely for anything.
Oh.
It just made me think, you know.
Good point.
So I mean, of course, you know, it's his daughter and And I'm just joking, of course. But it's time to name this animal. A calf, right? Cow. Is there another name for one of these things? Livestock.
A calf. Yeah. So it's a boy, right? So apparently, and I cannot believe, you know, I have never had anything to do with livestock in my life. But for this episode, of course, I was doing a little bit of poking around on cranking up the old internet. And yeah, so I guess cows are only female. Otherwise, it's a steer or a bull.
That's interesting.
Depending on whether or not it's been neutered.
Okay.
Yeah. But for now, he's a calf.
We went to a dairy barn. We got a tour of a dairy farm. And what we learned was very interesting. We always think of mooing cows, right, as kind of a happy cow. But from what they told us, if a cow is mooing, they're stressed out. So, you never want to hear a mooing cow. Interesting.
Oh God, that's so sad.
Let me just pick up this burger and wipe my tear with it.
Right.
but you never want to hear anybody being in distress or any animal being in distress or anything. But anyway, so we're going to talk a little bit about naming this animal.
What are you gonna name him?
Lissy. I'll call him Fagin.
What?
From a book I read once.
Oh, you mean Oliver Twist?
Uh-huh. I liked it.
I sure wouldn't have picked that name.
But, like you said, it's my calf.
Rubbing it in. This whole farm is going to be mine.
Exactly.
It's just the beginning, Laura.
You can't own property anyway, so...
They're putting me through medical school. But so Fagin, it's a weird choice for a name because that's the name of the leader of all the pickpocketing children from the from Oliver Twist. So
right.
I thought that was kind of interesting because he was one of those pickpocketing children.
Exactly. So that's the connection that they're clearly trying to make. But when I heard him say Fagin, my first thought was, where in Winoka hell did Albert read the Charles Dickens classic, Oliver Twist, right?
Under the stairs.
and so the play/film Oliver is based on this, but it was published between 1837 and 1839 in serial form, right? In bit by bit in magazines. And which, you know, this is like, you know, quite a few years earlier than when, you know, this episode is taking place. And like you said, it's an appropriate name in a sense because Albert is like, you know, he was a street urchin himself. But then why not just call the calf Oliver? Because as you said, in the novel, Fagin is an elderly criminal and he's Jewish. Now, we all know that Landon himself was Jewish, and he often sprinkles his episodes with Jewish references. Yeah. But this is a very interesting choice to me because Fagin is an evil character who dies in prison. And the characterization of Fagin that Charles Dickens gives him is like an egregiously anti-Semitic portrayal. So I'm just really curious about why. Because I think, didn't Landon direct this episode himself?
I can tell you that in, yeah, it's Michael Landon.
Yep. Yeah. So I assume he wrote it and directed it. And I would just love to find out, why not just name him Oliver?
You know, it would have been a lot better. And he looks, like an Oliver.
Yeah, he does. He's cute.
You know, there, and, going on the Jewish vibe thing, you know, there are a lot of people who are involved in Little House who are Jewish. And even the entire, you know, this the whole theme of the whole show goes towards Judaism. And it's just really, it is weird that the show also has a very large Christian following, which I just think is always strange. I remember watching it And my mother would say, why are you watching this show? It's like, she compared it to David and Goliath.
Right.
And it's, sure, there are Christian basic fundamentals of, you know, morality. But I think that goes across the board with most religions. You know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But as a Jew, like, I'm Jewish, so that's why she would do that. And this is kind of interesting. Also, David Rose, the person who does the music, he was also Jewish. I don't know if he... I'm assuming if he's still alive, he still is. But...
Oh, I got you right. Yeah, I got to look that up.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he passed away.
Right, right. No, it really has been something that even, I guess, in a sense, like practicing Christians really latch onto this show. Mm-hmm. And I know that when I was a child, so I lived with my great grandparents. They were Christians, very religious, and they didn't let me watch a whole lot of stuff. Well, I take that back. They let me watch all of the 70s, the things that were airing like in the 70s and early 80s, like Gilligan's Island, like a lot of like silly sitcoms they would let me watch.
Like What's but
they
Happening? Really,
they let me, they my great grandmother used to watch The Jeffersons with me.
Oh, I love,
and Stanford and Son. Yeah, so she's actually pretty cool. Like, they were pretty open about like what I could watch, but they would actually get into Little House on the Prairie with me. Except the episode where there's a fire at the blind school, it traumatized me. I started crying.
Of course, it's a hard, even now. It's
oh yeah,
very
I can't watch it, yeah.
Crazy episode.
Right.
Of course, you're talking about the one where Mary's baby is stuck upstairs with Jonathan's wife.
Yeah, the one where they abandon their baby.
Oh my, seriously. And she uses the baby as a battering ram, like,
yes, to break out the window. Yeah, that's just, I mean, you can understand why like a little kid would start crying. And so my grandparents said, you know, I think we're going to put Little House on the Prairie on hiatus for a couple months.
Sure.
They were like, that's too traumatizing for a child. So there was a couple months where I stopped watching it, but then we got back to it.
Yeah, of course. We have so many crazy adult themes in this show. And I do want to just mention Living on a Prairie, which is by the actress Pamela Bob. And I was just telling you about this, and unfortunately you haven't seen the trailer yet, but she has this whole thing that she's working on, and she's really talking about this in her show. And it's a comedy that she's created, but I think a lot of us Little House on the Prairie fans will really see eye to eye with it. We're just talking about the real serious themes that were brought up on this little, tiny, cute little TV show that people compare to The Waltons.
I cannot wait to watch that.
Seriously, it's the best thing in the world. Like, you will love it.
I know.
I really enjoyed it. And Pamela is such a smart and witty person that I really hope that it continues and continues. But enough of that. Back to 1878. We're talking about cattle here. All right, we're only 3 minutes and 38 seconds into the episode. But in this episode, we're 27 minutes in. So we're going to have to, let's crank it up a little bit.
Yes.
But there is still a lot of stuff to talk about. And all right, we're in the house. Ma's cooking. We have baby Grace, the littlest of times that we get to see baby Grace. Which I just...
She's so adorable.
Oh my, it's like just seeing this little baby grow up is also great. We also have a Carrie who you can somewhat understand.
Mm-hmm.
She even has a pretty decent line later, which I've snipped. But here we go.
You know, as young as that calf is, I can tell he's got some good blood in his background.
Now, he's going to say something. I rewound this 4 times. I do not understand a word that he's about to say where she says something about, I don't even know why you did this. We're not cattle farmer. And then he says, well, don't you remember getting such and such and pickles? So if you could just tell me what this sounds like to you, something about pickles.
I still don't understand, Charles. I mean, if it were a heifer, we could use the milk, but you're no cattle breeder.
You remember those pickles and preserves you entered the Brown County Fair over Sleepy Eye?
I just got it. I'm sorry.
Pickles and preserves you entered in the Brown County Fair?
Yeah, what did he say? Brown County Fair?
Maybe I'm just projecting my own last name onto it. I don't know.
I'm going to play one more time. But have you ever entered into a fair? like this, or do you do any type of that type of stuff?
No. And you know what? I don't think I've ever even been to a fair.
Oh, my gosh. Sure. Yeah. Got to do it. Well, if the world ever opens up again, you should definitely do that.
Yeah, see.
I go to the Queens County Fair, and I was going to enter. I make pickles and stuff like fermented, and I was going to enter, and then I realized they don't have a category for fermented foods. So I was really bummed out last year.
That seems strange. I've never been to a fair, but I feel like I know what types of food, or maybe it's just from watching Little House on the Prairie. Maybe that's where I get my ideas from.
We all live vicariously through Caroline.
Right.
And the Blue Ribbon. But I'm going to listen a little closer as to the name of the fair.
I still don't understand, Charles. I mean, if it were a heifer, we could use the milk. But you're no cattle breeder.
You remember those pickles and preserves you entered the Brown County Fair?
Yeah, the Brown County Fair.
Yeah, huh.
Family.
Okay.
Sleepy eye?
I still have the ribbon I won.
No reason Albert can't do just as well with a calf. Same time, he could learn a lot about livestock.
We also get this really new view in this shot of a camera shot from the kitchen's wall, like the one that they were that they had just built. Gil Gerard still, you know, you could still smell his cologne in the house.
And yet it still somehow looks awful. Like the white wall is all jagged at the top, right? It just looks awful. Nice. And I was thinking, like, instead of like messing around watching Albert and his calf, like Pa should be trying to make their home look less like an abandoned shack, right?
Honestly, you know what? Take the newspaper and hang it up like a curtain. It's better than what you got.
Take all of Ma's blue ribbons and hang them up like curtains.
You know, when the Honeymooners were new on television, I don't know if you've ever heard of this, people were so upset that they didn't have any type of wall hangings or curtains. And people would actually send them curtains. You know, people thinking, please put up a curtain, a shade, something. And I wonder if that ever happened in Little House. That's something that I should have asked people when I had their ear. Too late now. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I just think it's kind of strange. Now, the walls are plaster. This is something that I've learned a little bit more about. So the twigs that are in Carrie's room are not twigs. They're lathe. And they're Pa should finish the plastering, but that's lathe. It's not twigs.
Okay.
There's not bugs and stuff crawling in it, probably.
Probably
not. We don't know what that floor is made of.
Well, Grace is crawling around the floor, probably eating bugs.
Poor kid. Eating bugs. What do you got there, frog?
I did like you said, Mr. Ingalls. I made Fagin plenty of hay and a mixture of grain and corn.
Fagin?
Yeah, that's his name. It was his idea, not mine. Well, I can change it.
No, it's not the name that bothers me. I just don't want you to get too attached to him, that's all. When that Sleepy Eye Fair rolls around, he's going to bring a pretty good price at auction.
Oh, so we're talking about two fairs here. Brown and the Sleepy Eye Fair.
And wasn't the Brown Fair in Sleepy Eye? I'm so confused of all these fairs.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, but I know that fairs were definitely more common than they are now.
Yeah.
So what kind of fair is this? It's not, is it summer? I'm not really sure. Is it just autumn, maybe? No, it's not autumn.
Aren't the calves usually born in spring and maybe early summer?
I don't know
for sure. I'm just throwing that out there.
It sounds good. I'll go with it.
Who can enter them in a fair?
Not we, you. You're the one that's raised them. Do a good job, you just might win a prize.
There's prizes?
You're darn right there's prizes.
An Xbox. Not those
kids. Oh, don't worry, Mr. Ingalls. Fagin will win. I'm going to make sure he has enough grain. Supper's almost ready.
I better go with him. Otherwise, he'll spend the whole night out in the barn.
Pa, I forgot to show you. I got an A on my English test.
I knew you could do it. Why don't you clean up the table? Almost time for supper.
She looks at it. Actually, I'll let her tell us.
Was the only A in the class.
The only thing I could make that sadder is if she looked at the paper and said, I'll try for an A+ next time.
Right.
So sad. Come on. And this is Laura. This isn't Mary. Mary's gone. We don't know.
Right.
I would have to look in the timeline. I keep wanting to create a timeline of of where people are at certain times.
I think Mary's in Winoka right now. They left her. Yeah, when they came back home and took Albert, they left her at the blind school in Winoka.
Then they took the boy in.
Yeah.
Jeez. So yeah, I feel bad for Laura. Of course, this is, you know, there's a little bit of this sibling rivalry that she never really had to fight for Pa's love. And how do you compete against the boy that he always wanted?
Yeah.
And we do get a little bit of a strange Laura coming up. She even overshares, in my opinion. But here in the schoolhouse, we get introduced to Denzel McCauley, which is awesome. But I'm going to play what's going on in the classroom itself, because I just think it's kind of interesting what's going on.
Yes.
In the 11th century with King Edward the Confessor. Who's heard of the Battle of Hastings?
Yes, Willie?
My mom and Pa fought it last night at supper.
Willie, stand in the corner.
It's just a beaten down woman. Right? It's just like, all right, Willie, go in the corner. Like, it's not working. Sending him to the corner, it's too habitual. It's not working. Try a different method.
I know. Isn't he sent to stand in the corner like every single day? I mean, you can't fault him for his ignorance if he spends all of his time isolated from the class, right?
Now, one of the times you sent me was Alice Garvey giving a lesson. Do you want me to play that whole thing? Or I didn't know if...
This
is Alice Garvey's lesson on the Royals.
Oh, no. You don't need to play the whole thing, but I was just noticing the way that she begins the lesson by asking a question about, I think it was like, who is Queen Victoria?
I'll play it. It's totally fine.
Here. Yeah.
First thing we have to learn is the order of the accession to the throne.
What? She's talking about the line of kings and queens that ruled the country.
You mean they have to stand in line?
You're so dumb.
Thank you, Laura. The paper you have is the list of the royal monarchs.
I think I heard Laura mutter something like, at least somebody appreciates me. Thank you, Laura. And then she whispered something like, I'm going to have your job one day. Oh, my God. It's true.
They were all related in some way or another. We all know a little bit about our family tree, but usually not in such detail. Who knows who the ruler of Great Britain is today? Yes, Laura?
Queen Victoria.
That's right.
What? That's a very loaded question right there. And a loaded answer.
She's a widow now, but her husband Albert and her had 9 children before he died.
Laura, what are you writing down? Oh, I just want to remind Pa that I got the answer right.
Oh, I know. I mean, she grins like she just won a beauty pageant, yeah. You know. And so, like, this plays into the storyline, right? Like, yeah. this is one of the only places in which Laura is now feeling appreciated is in school, outside of the home, mm-hmm. right?
But how old is Laura? Do you think
I was wondering that as well. I'm guessing like maybe 13.
I mean, so you know, puberty is kind of going through its things, and yeah. my daddy's not paying attention to me. So we're writing all that into the character as well. In real life, let me see, Melissa Gilbert would have been 14.
Okay.
13, 14, same thing. And so I think, and we're getting close to the world of Almanzo. So, I mean, we're getting close to changing everything up.
Man, I just cannot get used to calling Almanzo. Him Almanzo. No, I just can't get used. And I know that's correct, but... From all of those years of watching Little Lights on the Pea, you know, I was just so used to Almanzo. And I think Almanzo sounds better.
You know, it's, and I don't know if you listened to the interview I did with Lucy Lee Flippin, where
takes
full
so
credit
much.
For yes. saying it incorrectly. But I also think Almanzo is a much better name. But when you break it down, at least when I think about it, Manly is, you know, from Almanzo. So it just kind of, I don't know. It's kind of sticking.
Right. It does fit. But I feel like, didn't they say that like the origin of the name was it like Spanish or something?
I think Zaldamo is.
No. Well, I feel like in one of the books I read or something, it was somebody who had helped out the
Wilder family. There's a story there. There's a story
behind it. But I feel like if it really was Spanish, then it would be pronounced with the softer A, Almanzo. Almanzo isn't, that's like more of an English thing.
I like the way Almanzo sounds. It's a little snootier too. It's a little bit higher class than Almanzo.
Almanzo.
It's softer.
Yeah, it is.
So I enjoy the pronunciation of Almanzo. I had to think about that one. Which one? Almanzo.
I know, it's getting so confusing.
But it's wrong. So
it's wrong, but however,
it feels right. It's wrong,
she
but it feels
is
right.
A genius, and if she, that's the way she saw fit to pronounce it, who yes. am I to argue with Lucy Lee Flippin?
One of the funniest people that I've ever spoken to on the show outside of the interview. Like, she is really just crazy in a good way.
I've always idolized her. I love her so much.
She's very, very sweet, and we're trying to get in touch with her. So I don't know if Lucy Lee Flippin listens to this podcast, but we've reached out to you, Lucy Lee. Please reach out to us.
Yes.
You know what it is? She's very, very private. She lives like deep in Pennsylvania. She doesn't deal with technology, and I cannot blame her for one moment.
Yeah, that sounds heavenly, actually.
Yeah, right? So, right? Like, especially right now, you know.
Yes. But,
so I do want to just finish this clip because I do want to see the cursive that's about to be written on the board. It's
always named after a king, are you, boy?
He wasn't a king, he was a consort.
Our Albert ain't no prince either. Nobody knows what he is.
And we have Denzel, who we've never seen Denzel before, right?
No, but you know who he reminds me of? He reminds me of, was it the werewolf Halloween episode with the blonde?
Yeah,
the
that big tall blonde. Guy. Yeah.
He looks like maybe like he would be his younger brother or something. He looks a lot like him to me.
He's like the bully version.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We've never heard of this guy. Would it have killed them to just, I don't know, write in some reoccurring characters once in a while? Like, this town has so much turnover. It's like, what's going on with people? I really think that there was some type of mass murderer going around killing blonde people. They're all blonde too.
Right. Yeah. They're all really, really blonde. And Children of the Damned.
Yes, absolutely. And especially, forgetting his name, especially Denzel.
Yes. And I could see, some sort of, hybrid little H and the P true crime story, you know, emerging from all the disappearing children.
Yeah. Well, there is that story about the Bloody Baiters.
Yes.
And that wasn't like right around town, but there is that rumor that the real Charles Ingalls had something to do with ending that entire craziness.
Right, but I think I read somewhere that was debunked.
Probably
something with the timeline. Yeah, but I mean, it was a really good story though. But I think something about like the timelines not matching up.
Yeah, Pa was the guy who like sold him like the gun, or sold him the hatchets. That's a crazy story. The Bloody Baiters is a very, very, very violent, very crazy story, I think.
Yes.
But that's true crime. This is a different type of crime. This is a crime of my Pa. You're stealing my Pa.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So here we go. We're coming out of the schoolhouse. Things are about to get turned up pretty quickly.
Hey, I get to work find Prince Albert.
This guy has a great head of hair, too, by the way.
They always do.
They really do. It's like floppy and total surfer cut. It's
cool. Don't pay any attention to him. You know, Fagin's going to have to get a lot of exercise. Otherwise, all he's going to do is eat and get fat.
Maybe we could take him for a walk before supper.
Well, I have some chores to do, but you can go ahead if you want to.
If he's Prince Albert, maybe Laura's Sleeping Beauty.
Keep it in your pants, Chief. It's not that funny. He's so proud of himself.
Actually, yeah, that's not actually an insult.
Right. It's like, so you're naming some of the most popular characters of literature.
Right, yeah, and beautiful.
Yeah.
Your Pa said Bacon's father was a purebred Hereford. That's good, isn't it?
Who's your father, Albert?
Now we're turning the knife. Now it's just too much. You just can't do this.
None of your business, Denzel McCauley.
You don't know who he is any more than he does, Miss High and Mighty Ingalls.
Shut up, Denzel.
There's a name for kids like you. Except my pa would wash my mouth out with soap if I said it.
It never stopped a lot of other people from saying things that they're not supposed to say. Like monkey business. You know, we hear all types of stuff. But I'm surprised he didn't call him a bastard. I really don't. I think that would have been the reason why this next part would have come. And it would have made for a great discussion in the show. Like,
exactly.
He called me a bastard.
Yeah.
I think he's called a bastard in another episode.
I think so.
With the family tree, I believe. I don't know for sure, though.
And, you know, this is another likely connection to the novel, Oliver Twist, because it's revealed that Oliver's parents had a love affair but never married. Mm. And so Oliver, you know, he could be
a lot of correlation
with that. You're right, with that epithet.
But just like in pro wrestling, Laura goes right for his throat. It's like you're expecting like ding ding and her to pick up like one of those chairs and crack it over his head or something. It's like, what? And that's another thing. We have all of these fighting games nowadays, like with Xbox and PS4 and all this junk. When are we going to get like a Laura Ingalls or a Nelly character in like Mortal Kombat or something? Come on.
I want to see Pa himself, like shirtless, oiled up.
You know, I still cannot believe that there was not an Atari 2600 Little House on the Prairie game where you have to like run away from the tornado or something.
Right.
You have to get the seed to the crop.
Right. I guess the closest we got was the Oregon Trail with the pioneers.
Yeah. The dysentery.
Yeah, dysentery. Constant dysentery.
But we have we also have a Carrie who's growing up very quickly. I like this version of Carrie. I think she's definitely she's much less annoying.
Yes.
A lot of people hate Carrie. Mary is the one that I focus on that I'm like, not you, out. That's what I say.
Mary?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, same. Yeah.
Too sassy.
Yeah.
Leave him alone! You gonna fight his battles for him, too?
And Albert, being like 60 pounds, jumps on this kid who easily is like 30% bigger. And Albert's a scrapper, right? He grew up on the streets.
Yes.
He knows how to fight. More visual.
Punch him, Albert! Punch him!
And the poor Carrie, she just looks at it. She's about to cry, and she's like, blink, blink. Oh, my God. She's so sensitive.
Yeah, she cries first.
Yeah. Oh, poor Carrie. She really is so sensitive.
Yeah.
But we have, we just hear like the punches, like a boxing match.
And they're way louder than they should have been, like for Albert's little fist. You know what I mean? Like the sound effect was just too loud for those little fists.
Yeah, it's like punching a heavy bag.
Yeah.
They head back to the little house.
Albert, my goodness, what happened? Charles?
Now, all right, I love this scene for a number of reasons. One, Laura is really kind of not just impressed, but she's honored that Albert would step up and help her, you know? And then you have Pa in that weird moment that I've been there where you cannot go as far as he went. When something like this happens.
Yeah.
He was defending my honor.
A fight? Oh, you look terrible. Are you all right?
What's going on? What in the world happened to you, boy?
I'm sorry, sir. It was that Denzel McCauley. He was saying
I had to hit him, sir. Well, Laura might have been hurt.
You went around with that big Macaulay boy?
He sure did, and he beat him, too.
I'll be darned.
Charles, he was in a fight. He could have been seriously injured.
You're right.
But he saved me.
Now, there you see. He didn't have any choice. You know what that Denzel's like.
He took a hold of my arms, and he was shaking me.
That'll
like
do,
this.
Laura. Come on, Albert. Let's get you cleaned up.
Right now, ma'am? I mean, Laura and me haven't even seen Fagin yet.
It looks a lot worse than it is. I'll watch the boy in the barn. Come on, hold it.
Damsel in distress. We've got potatoes to peel.
What about Fagin?
Albert and I will take care of him. You go on, help your mom.
Oof, rebuffed. Poor kid. Just wants to get Pa's attention.
And yet everyone's making the damsel in distress, like, fairy tale allusions to her. You know, it has to be so annoying and infuriating to her, you know, after Denzel, you know, called her Sleeping Beauty, and now Ma calls her a damsel in distress. So she's really, like, they're really hammering home here the fact that Pa's preference at this moment is for a boy around the farm, a son, right? And he was just so gleeful about the fight. Like, you know, he's like, so Albert, did you took off your shirt, right? You took off your shirt to fight, right? Because that's what I always do, right? Chip off the little lock.
I'm like this, and you know.
Yeah.
Let's go wrestle. But, you know, it's one of those things where, I hate to say it, but they're kind of reminding the Laura character where her place is.
Right.
And, you know, I think that's something that really kind of annoys people these days with this whole thing. But it's just the way it was. This was 150 years ago.
Exactly.
It was much worse than this. But we have fun music to listen to. I was just going to play some of it as Albert is struggling to get Fagin to do what he wants, and you see him just kind of feeding and all that kind of stuff. I don't know why the audio is so loud there, but it's struggling. He's giving a good, what are you supposed to do, I guess? It's, you know, I don't know much about raising cattle, but
but Fagin has grown a lot in this montage, like during this montage.
Yeah. And, you just see like the connection between, Charles and Albert just growing more and more and more. And you know, it's sweet.
Yeah.
But bittersweet. We have Laura doing what I refer to as third grade snap math. Cause it's just, these are equations that you're supposed to know in the snap.
Oh,
you know?
My God. I,
you remember snap math?
Me so much. Like, how old is she again? Like, yeah, you know these by like third, maybe fourth grade.
Yeah, listen to this first problem, if you even want to call it that.
Yeah.
2 times 12 is
24. Wait.
Oh, God.
What are you, 40? Like,
I had to like stop when I was watching this episode in preparation. I had to stop and like, wait, did I hear what I thought I heard? 2 times 12 is 24. Like, what grade is she in?
But they do get more complicated, I guess. But well, if my kid 13. Was if my kid was sitting next to me reciting math in my ear, I would shove him in that like crick that's behind her. Oh my God, shut up.
3 times 12 is 36. 4 times 12 is 48. 5 times 12 is 60.
Actually, they're not getting more difficult for whatever reason. I mean, she's just adding 12. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess they had to have her do something, but they could have named the states or the residents or something. A little bit more on her level.
Right.
Even that's the states wouldn't be on her level.
I mean, isn't that an insult to Mrs. Garvey's teaching?
A little bit. And and Charles is just like, what?
Yeah, he's not.
6 times 12.
72.
I would have loved it if one of them was wrong. I think that would have been so funny. 81.
You are going to be the team to beat at the fair, you know that?
Come on, Fagin.
This is a full-grown thing now.
Yeah.
This is, I think he even references it to a 600 pounds of beef. Ugh. God. Thing, is just too big. I mean, these things kind of scare me a little bit.
Oh, but, yeah.
They're just too big. Horses scare me, and these things scare me.
Huge.
Yeah. So, let's see. And she tells a weird story. I think this is a very weird tell of loose girls in her class.
Mm-hmm.
Or what she might think of girls in her class. And what you can get for licorice.
Come on, boy. Come on, Fagin.
Oh, where were you?
I was doing my 12 tables.
All right, go ahead.
No, I guess I know him pretty good.
Pretty well.
I didn't tell you what I heard about Nellie and that Denzel McCauley.
I think he knows his name.
Who, Denzel?
Oh, silly Fagin, look.
Come on, Fagin. I thought calves were too dumb for that.
Well, look, he comes when Albert calls him.
Well, I would, too, if he had my supper. Anyway, Sarah Lewis told me that Martha Kennedy said that Mrs. Garvey caught Nellie and Denzel kissing behind the schoolhouse. She probably promised him a bag of licorice, huh?
So, it's just really kind of, you know... I'm surprised he didn't squash this. This is gossip. And it's something that I think the Engels really, really, they frown upon.
Yes. And isn't it strange? Like, isn't Denzel around Albert's age? And Nellie's
and
already been a... Yeah, and Nellie's already been a married woman.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. He looks a little bit like his little brother.
Right. I mean, like, Nellie is a young woman now. And Denzel, I mean, he's larger than Albert, but he's still a little boy. It's very strange.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's her just spreading a rumor. She's trying really hard. So here we are, we're talking, and Laura is trying really, really hard here.
I'm sorry, fine.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. She was trying really hard, and then Albert comes and says, my cow is a cough. Weird. Can you come and, you know, take a look? I think it's pretty bad. So, Pa.
Yeah.
Gotta go.
I clipped the wrong time. But, sorry. But that brings us to Doc Baker. Who doesn't love to see yet that head of hair? his hair's always nuts. He's one of my favorite characters on the entire show.
Same.
He's so much blood on his hands.
Yeah, really... him showing up, that means almost certain death for Fagin, right?
Yeah, or miraculous, healing overnight.
Which right.
Hopefully that happens.
Right.
Here we go.
What do you think, Doc?
I've seen it before. They call it husk. Comes from pasture grass. I'm sorry, Albert.
So I looked up what husk was. And it's kind of a good description of, you know, he gives a decent description, but it's some type of, it's a lungworm that infestates. What am I talking about? There's an infestation, in the lungs from these lungworms. And it's kind of like, a larvae. It's very strange. And they get it from ingesting grass. They just kind of randomly get it.
Yeah, and it's like almost like parasitic, and it's I guess related to bronchitis. I guess it settles in the lungs. That's why he's got that cough.
I'm looking at all these things that they're calling it, but I think that nowadays they just give some type of antibiotic. But back then, let's listen to how you cure this thing. Pretty much how you cured everything back then that didn't have a real way of fixing.
I can't promise any miracles. There is one treatment. But it's quite drastic.
What is it?
Husk is caused by worms which infect the lung tissue.
Gross.
The only remedy is an injection made up of chloroform, spirits of turpentine, and a small amount of creosote.
An injection of these things.
Wow.
Of turpentine.
Turpentine.
And it's weird because you can, if you listen really close, you hear Albert whisper something about morphine, I think. What about the morphine?
The morphine. Isn't Doc Baker says it like he pronounces it like morphine.
Morphine or morphine. Yeah. Oh, my God. But, yeah, so he has lung worms, and it's terrible, and we don't know if he's going to make it. You know, that's his bond with Pa. You know, I was curious why they didn't have a thing with Laura, where she was like, well, you know, if he dies, he, you know, we'll get another one for you. And it's, you have Albert kind of getting upset over that comment.
Right.
I can always think of scenes that they should have added.
I guess
it's easy to do that in a 46-minute episode.
Yeah.
So here we go. We're going to stay with the calf. Is it a calf still?
I think it's a full grown? Very large, oversized calf.
Okay, right. Is a calf in spirit.
Right.
And mentality of a calf.
Yes.
So they say that the next 24 hours are really going to be the telltale. You know, it's going to determine whether he's going to live or not. So this is what, 10 hours later that they wake up? I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense. He said 24 hours. Here we are the next morning.
Oh, right.
Is he gonna make it?
I'd say so. Doc said it'd take some time. I think you made him strong enough to beat it.
I hope so.
I could taste those ribs right now.
Albert, wake up! Just look at him!
We can hear you from the house.
He's all right. He's gonna make it. Me and Pa did it.
Thank God.
Hey, you know something? I'm starved.
My eggs will be burning. Come on.
Who leaves eggs on? I mean, you're cooking with cast iron, woman. I have to call her woman because it's 1878. But I do all the cooking in my house. So it's like, what are you doing? Cast iron? Ugh, nobody wants dry eggs, Caroline.
Yes.
Nobody wants that.
Yeah.
Get it.
We'll be right in.
Be right in, Paul. I'm going to fix it some beeper.
All right.
This reminds me of the episode when what was Al Manzo's brother's name? Pearly
something.
Pearly D.
Pearly Day.
Something like that. I just reviewed the episode. I totally forgot it. But I remember he ran the horse too hard and the horse's legs swelled. And Charles had a similar overnight with Al Manzo.
Yeah. Oh.
Where the next morning, and remember, it's almost the same thing. And Laura's like, I'll make everything. I'll make you bacon. Canadian bacon, even. Do you eat waffles? What's a waffle?
Don't take too long. There won't be any food left.
Okay. You stay right there.
He didn't notice, did he?
Notice what?
I didn't notice this either. Did you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I did.
I didn't.
Because that scene where he's Albert is trying to hint to Charles that he wants to call him Pa, and he's just so obvious about it. So I think that's why, it really just, he just sort of, hammers it over, you know, over and over. Like, oh, you know, I don't want to call you Mr. Ingalls, but Charles is weird, you know, can I call, you know, basically, can I call you Pa? And I guess because of that, just the way he says it, he kind of, turns these, moony eyes onto Charles that it stuck in my mind. So I picked up on that right away.
Now also Charles calls him son all the time. And I know I have friends who call I'm a Boy Scout leader. So, I don't call people son, even my son. I won't call son. I call him by his name.
Right.
But I do have a friend and he's like, son, you know, and it's part of his vocabulary and his, mannerism. So that seems like a Pa type thing, a Charles Ingalls type of thing.
Sure.
But I think whenever he's saying it in this episode, I think Albert is really, I think they're trying to hammer it home a little bit there as well.
Yeah.
Well, you called him Pa by mistake.
It wasn't a mistake. He told me I could.
He did?
You know how it is. Kids in school asking me who I live with and all. Just makes it easier all around. Come on, let's eat.
Easier all around? And as he walks out, I think he mutters, "This farm's gonna be mine." Again, yeah. He repeats it.
It's part of the plan. But I guess I kind of get it with all of these new kids constantly showing up and then disappearing. Like, you know, if they don't, you know, if he just calls him Pa, then they don't have to go into the whole backstory, right? About the Eagles taking him in and then, you know, adopting him. Like, all they know is, like, that's his dad, right? So I guess it kind of makes sense.
The whole thing is, I mean, he does adopt a lot of children over the seasons. Does bring a lot of them in. So Laura never built onto the house. Except for that kitchen. And even then he didn't build it. He hired Buck Rogers to build it.
That's right.
So we have... Laura doesn't feel well, but then Pa calls her out for it and says, "Come on in, I'm riding into town." And Nellie is standing right there. And this is Nellie... This is mature Nellie. Not mature in the way she is, but she's old enough where I don't know why she's still in school. Like, I'm not really sure how old she's supposed to be here. But she's a woman at this point. I don't really understand it, but she still acts like the good old Nellie that we always love. Alison Arngrim is always 100% on point with this.
Yes.
Oh, it's Pa now. Is it?
Leave me alone.
Well, your father's always wanted a son. Guess he finally got one.
Shut up, Nellie.
What's the matter, Laura? Don't you like your new brother?
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 It's my new ringtone.
That laugh. I know that's like a woodpecker.
Yeah. She knocks her out. Then she gives a right hook to her left eye. And from what I recall, she has a black eye on the other side. But that's okay. It's very funny. But she knocks her out. Like, she goes down. It was like a TKO type situation.
Yeah.
But this is kind of strange because she gets sent home or fighting in front of the mercantile. So it's not even on school grounds.
Yeah.
Maybe it was during school. No, it was probably before school. We get a great shot of Grace with this crocheted hat, which is pretty rocking. It's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Don't you want to talk about it?
Oh, wait, I kind of skipped something here. Sorry.
Who's coming home early?
What are you doing home early, Hefner?
It's in the note.
Sent home for fighting? Nellie Olson. Why, Laura?
I don't know.
Come on, it's not like you. Did she say something?
Don't you want to talk about it?
No.
So she's just, you know, she clearly does not want to talk to her stupid family about this. They wouldn't understand anyway. Probably just give the farm to Albert. And well, Half Pint, you're just going to get married and take that guy's name. So we want to keep it the Ingalls farm.
Not that Almanzo's name.
Wilder farm. Be competition. Horse farm. So... We're going to take a ride down to Mercantile. We're going to apologize to Nellie. Now, we've seen this in a lot of television shows where people put a steak on their bruise, right?
Right. It's such a TV cliche, right?
Yeah, I'm thinking Brady Bunch. I've seen it. Any boxing movie, maybe. But I think that the theory is that the iron from the meat is supposed to absorb in through your skin.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, but...
I think it would be if it was a cold steak, right, I would think that the temperature maybe might help with swelling or something.
Yeah, but I would think so, but yeah, I mean, but from what I've read, all the bacteria that you're placing on your face is not exactly the best idea.
Well, so, probably not. Yeah. It doesn't seem like it would be.
Get an ice pack or something frozen in the freezer. But right. They didn't have anything like that. They only had an ice.
I was going to say, they didn't have like a bag of peas. And they're like, No, wait, this is 18, whatever.
A bag of peas. What do you mean a bag of peas? You mean seed?
What is that?
Daddy, darling, Mother has another nice steak for you. Oh, I'll be right back, dear.
Beautiful house, right? I mean, curtains, wallpaper.
Oh, yeah. And Mrs. Olsen herself, like, I mean, she was Catherine McGregor. She was always, growing up, she was always my very favorite to watch.
She's so well put together on the show and off the show.
Isn't she? She, like, the little touches of her jewelry and everything, just like her little ear bobs that she's wearing, very tasteful.
And I've said it before, I would have loved there to be an episode where everyone swaps characters, where you have Karen Grosley play Harriet. I just think, you know, I think there's a mean streak to Karen Grosley, and I would love to see her do it. And we've seen the sweet part of Harriet. So yes. I just would love to see a swap of everything. But again, fan fiction.
The closest we get is that dream that Laura has about them being rich and the Olsons being poor. Yeah, that's the closest we ever get.
Yeah, that's true. But here we go. We're going to see what kind of apology we get out of Laura.
Caroline.
Mrs. Olson.
Well, I'm surprised that your daughter has the gall to show her face around here.
Laura would like to speak to Nellie if it's all right.
Come in, please.
So I shouldn't say she's in the parlor.
Nellie, darling, Mrs. Ingalls is here with Laura.
They're 3 feet away. Like, she heard them come in.
Right. The steak affected her hearing.
Right. We don't see.
Keep her away from me
now.
Through the meat, she said. This is a meat mask. But it's a. and we don't see Nellie's face yet, which is just. Oh, I can't wait.
Now, darling, it's all right. Mother's here.
They're just staring at her. Oh my God. Dead air.
Well, I should say so.
Ruined her dress. All the way from St. Louis.
Not St. Louis, Missouri.
Don't worry, we'll pay for it.
With what? You're poor. With eggs?
It has to be an expensive dress. And I looked that up about, because I was like St. Louis, Missouri, like what? Yeah. Like, you know, because I know a little bit about like fashion and the U.S. fashion industry in the 1800s. Oh. So like the majority of like U.S. made women's fashion, such as it was, because most of women's fashion would have actually been imported from Paris. Right. But in the U.S., it was, you know, pretty much all produced in New York. Or so I thought. I looked it up, and in 1872, there were 141 dressmakers in St. Louis, Missouri, and by 1882, 126 clothing retail stores in Missouri, or in St. Louis specifically, 126. And this industry was helped in part and flourished because of the newly developed railroads. So the retail is starting to branch out in this era, which was news to me. So it's very possible the dress came from St. Louis.
A long time ago, Kim Lair turned me on to this book. It's the 1895 Montgomery Ward unabridged copy of their catalog, which I really, really recommend to everyone. And you can really pick them up for like less than $20. It's a huge like kind of coffee table book. I have it in front of me. And it's beautiful because it's the actual size. It's not like crunched down to a pocket size thing that nobody wants. And they have dresses in here and fancy spring jackets. I mean, this stuff is more formal, but, you know, right. capes. But each dollar is equivalent to, let's just say, about $25. But we're looking at one particular cape, a lady's spring cape, 22 inches long. It is silk lined. It is $10.50. So we're looking at about $260.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so, yeah, a lot of women spent that. I mean, if you had money, even in the 1800s, you could easily spend, you know, a couple thousand dollars, you know, again, if you're wealthy, spend a couple thousand dollars on your wardrobe each season, if you're a woman, because, and also they would often change their clothing several times throughout the day. And, you know, a lot of women, especially in upper society, you know, were, expected to maintain a nice wardrobe. Now the Olsons, you know, they're not upper crust, but they think they are. So they're definitely striving toward that. But the thought of Ma paying for that dress, like what really happened? She fell down on the dirt. Like maybe she has
get
like,
a tied to go stick.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, I mean, just from watching that scene, you know, you see Laura punches her once, she goes down. It didn't look like her dress was torn or anything. Like, why is she paying for the dress?
Nellie's nails are on point in this scene.
Yes.
They are very nice.
Yeah, they are.
Now, this, I just have to mention this because I'm flipping through this as you're talking, and I got to the gloves. So they have men's dog skin gloves. I don't, is dog skin another name for another material that you ever heard skin? Of?
Like, how's it spelled?
D-O-G, skin, like, you know, Fido. It's men's unlined dogskin gloves, fancy backs.
Oh, but aren't there are other? I think there are other like small animals that are known. Like they're not actually dogs, but I think it's referring to like some other like small animal skin.
I'm gonna put a little post-it in this one. I need to come back to that. But like I have mole skin notebooks and they're made of leather. So they're not made of I always thought it was made of moles when I was younger. And it's like, oh no, it's pronounced mole skin. I'm like, excuse me. I usually throw out the little card that it comes with. But
right.
But they are my favorite notebooks, the mole skins. All right. So I gotta find out what dog skin is. Hopefully it's not what we think, and some like Naga hide. Let's hope. It's probably not though, right? It's not Naga hide. Where are we? We are the steak. It's a bad idea. She's probably gonna get pink eye from all that bacteria. There's a lecture about what you did is that and that's wrong. And I think Laura gets to the point where, you know, I don't think what's going on is that bad. Do you? I mean, I don't think Pa's doing anything horrible. Do you? I mean, do you think any of this is really that terrible?
No. I think she's definitely overreacting.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Growing up, it's kind of like, you know, I would have liked to see them play on that a little bit. Like, kind of like, well, I'm not a little girl anymore. And they do touch upon that in a little bit.
Well, what's interesting is that Laura exhibits in some ways and often throughout the series, like the Electra complex where like a daughter in
say
some ways.
What kind of complex?
Oh, I'm sorry. Electra. So there's like, it's called the Electra complex. And it's
I just want to say I have an art degree. Okay. I didn't take those classes.
Right. So this was a concept that was developed by Carl Jung. And so it's basically just the idea of like a daughter desiring her father. And it's often, of course, interpreted
an Oedipus type of thing, or
well, it's interpreted like sexually in some ways, but it's not necessarily sexual. It's more of like feeling in competition with the mother for the father's attention and affection. But in this case, you know, it's Albert, right, that she feels in competition with.
Yeah, there's a lot of strange things. I mean, they do touch upon this thing. I jumped over it. But she was mentioning how, do you remember when I was little, we used to say that I would marry you one day, Pa.
Yes, that caught my attention. That's what made me think of the Electra complex.
But, you know, it's such an innocent gesture. Yeah. Like, my son says that he wants to marry his girlfriend and live in our basement, you know?
Right. Oh, yeah. No. It is. Yeah. And it's definitely meant that way, of course, here as well. And you know, I think probably, well, not me, but probably a lot of children think like, oh, you know, when I grow up, I'm going to marry, I guess, somebody that they're already very close to. Right. But right. Not really understanding what marriage means. And of course, I always think the scenes with Pa and Laura are very sweet. But yes. it did just the way that she sort of like out of the blue came out with that and was like trying to impress him with like all of the special dishes she'd made for him. It just really made me think of like the psychological Electra complex.
So no, very I love it. I think you're spot on. So she has a Jan Brady moment here where she's really dealing with a lot of stuff. Yeah. Well, she storms out after giving a half-hearted apology.
Yeah.
Because Harriet, of course, is giving a lecture about it. So storms out and Ma comes by. And for the first time ever, I think she is embarrassed of Laura's behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Doc Baker might see you. You know, it's right. Kind of strange. You're right in town, you idiot.
And you're crying in public.
Right.
Just stop that crying now.
Nobody cares about me. Nellie gets punched, everybody cares. Megan gets sick, everybody cares.
Why do we not have Harriet standing at the door listening in?
She's so nosy.
We know that would be going on.
Yeah.
Laura, that's not true.
Yes, it is. I know it's true. And Albert. I thought he liked me. But it wasn't me he wanted. It was Pa. My Pa. He doesn't even spend any time with me anymore. He's always with Albert and that stupid cat. And Albert. He calls him Pa.
So, yeah, there's a lot of things here. There's a lot of stuff going on. And I went through something similar in Boy Scouts where we have some kids who don't, you know, they're from families that are divorced or they're just kind of, they should be divorced. And, you know, so very often the leaders will just kind of give more of attention to the kids who don't have so much support at home. And in a very innocent way. So don't look at me that way, Paris.
Right.
We don't need to hear any more of these YouTube commercials. But my son, I saw it affecting him. It was just like, you know, he's over there struggling to do something. And it's like, I'm here helping this kid. And it's like, that's where I really just drew the line almost immediately and as nicely as possible, walked away from them all. And I said, I just decided, although I help out a lot with them still, I decided to take a step back and focus on my son because that's fair, I think.
Right.
And I would never want to personally be in that situation. So I could see, I kind of get it, but at the same time, I think that Laura shouldn't feel this way because it's her brother, essentially.
Just,
it's a little selfish. That's the bottom line. It's a little selfish.
Yeah.
So we have a setup for a kind of a funny thing here a little bit when they go back to the little house where Caroline wants to see Charles alone. It just seems like, hey, what's going to happen in the barn?
I need to talk to you. Can we go in the barn?
All right.
Sure can. That's like what's happening in there. Stay out here, Albert.
Right.
As soon as you finish brushing him, you take care of his hooves. And remember, there's four of them.
I counted. One on each corner.
Whoa, that's not that funny. I'm just messing with them all. Do they have another cow? Yeah, they have a milk cow in the background.
Yeah.
They're brown and white. How come they're not hanging out?
Right?
Weird. They act like they've never been around a cow, actually.
I know.
In this whole episode.
It's ridiculous.
Well, what happened?
I hear a cow mooing. I think he's in distress.
Aww.
Laura has a lot on her mind. most of which she passed on to me.
What are you complaining that your daughter confided in you her actual feelings? I don't want to have to deal with this alone, Charles. Talk to this girl. Kind of true. Kind of what she says.
What is it?
What?
She doesn't feel needed around here. Or loved.
What? Come on, Carolyn, that's just plain silly.
I don't think it is.
Brush you real good.
I'm going to let this play through because this is kind of a Three's Company moment where Albert overhears them talking. Mm-hmm. And although it's the truth, he really takes it a little too far to heart, too much to heart.
Now I'm going to do your hose.
Poor Albert. He's really innocent here, right? I mean, this kid was living under a flight of stairs. And now he's, you know, in a caring family and he has a cow. He's really living the life. And it's going to be squashed in about 4 seconds. Pay attention.
I'm trying to get the farm back on its feet. Now, that takes up most of my day.
And the rest is for Albert.
What is the thing with Albert? He's got 600 pounds of beef out there. That's money in the bank.
Know that. But Laura only remembers what it was like before he came. In a lot of ways, she's still your little girl.
I mean, in a lot of ways, she is my little girl. You know that.
Charles, why are you arguing with me? Could it be because there's a grain of truth in what she's thinking?
What, that I don't love her?
No. That you've been neglecting her.
I don't even think what they said was that bad.
No, but still, it's like, lady, you have an entire prairie. Like, you know, Albert's standing right there. Why didn't you go take pa somewhere else?
They don't understand these simple things. Pa goes down the creek to Laura and says, you'll always be my little girl. And they make up, essentially. I mean, just like that, everything is good. Now, Albert leaves a note, which I thought was interesting. It says, Dear Mr. Ingalls, I would have stayed, but farming just ain't my line of work. Say goodbye to everyone for me, and thanks for everything. Albert, P.S. Ask Laura to take care of Fagin for me.
Oh.
Asking a favor. And who are you again, Albert?
He's so, Oliver Twist.
He really is. He's very poetic. I don't believe that's his handwriting, but maybe you should have cursed it next time. Practice it. It's all like printed out.
Right.
So they see the note and it kind of quickly gets to the point. It's a very sad thing. We see Ma playing with Grace and they're all just having a moment in time and he's walking away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie mentions, Carrie gets almost a shut up Carrie, but
yeah, right.
I think it's pretty good. They're all kind of concerned, of course. It's nighttime now, and here we go.
When's Albert gonna be home?
Doesn't look like tonight, darling.
We're supposed to pick berries tomorrow. He promised.
Well, you're just thinking about yourself, really. You're not too worried about him, are you? It's just everyone's feeling like this overwhelming guilt. It's really sad. Except for Carrie. Carrie's just like, berries. Where did he go? He's probably up in the loft or something, like of the little house. I mean, not the little house, the barn. I guess he can go anywhere. You go sleep under the stairs of Doc Baker's thing.
Maybe find some stairs to sleep under.
Like, I don't think he has to sleep under stairs. No, that's his thing.
Right, he wants to.
He's under the stairs at the Mercantile.
Right, it's part of his like Dickensian life that he's trying to live. Like he's trying to be Oliver Twist.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I see a correlation between Albert and Oliver Twist. Sure, and especially with this episode.
Yeah.
So here we get Pa starting to, I guess, get down to the crux of the problem and maybe the reality of the situation.
You can't change a city boy, I guess. But in the blood, kind of like farming. back to her. Shining shoes and pinching pennies and having a high old time.
It's all right if you tell me that you loved him.
I feel like the entire episode was written around this scene. I feel like that's how Michael Landon works.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And he, you know, he's like, I'm going to make you cry. But I'm not crying. You're crying. So this is such a sentimental episode too. We have this like really emotional moment. Laura is really not taking too much responsibility here. Mm. I think I don't know if it ever got to the character that, the reason he left is because of you, which I think was unfair.
Yeah, she never really articulates that she understands that.
So fast forward, we're at the fair. Why would we skip the fair?
Hmm.
You know, we got to bring home that blue ribbon.
And we know it's the fair because of the used car lot banners strung across the street, right? Yeah. And the very modern fast food concession buildings that are lining the block. So that's how we, the viewer, are given the visual cue that it's a fair.
And there's also cakes and pies and fish.
Oh, yeah.
There's people in wagons eating watermelon and spitting out the seeds. Disgusting.
Yes.
But you can't swallow them. It'll grow in your stomach.
Right.
Were you ever told that when you were a kid?
Not about watermelons, but I was told that about tomato seeds.
Oh, that's
weird. Yeah. I was told a scary story. My great-grandma said that if I ate too many, because I love tomatoes, and if I ate too many, and that, you know, all the seeds inside the tomatoes, that they would have to do surgery on me to take out all the seeds from my stomach because they would just accumulate in there.
Thanks, Grandma. And you're giving me these why are these on my plate?
And the funny thing was, like, I didn't even care. I was like, oh well, I'll take the risk. I love tomatoes that much, like, it's fine, you know. I'm gonna swallow
my gum too,
right?
It's a fake cautionary tale,
right?
One of the funnier stories my mother told me a long time ago was that she was told by her grandmother that if you ate too many more than one banana a day, you would die.
Oh,
and supposedly there's, but supposedly there's some form of, not truth to it, but a rumor that dates all the way back to the early part of the 20th century.
So, oh,
that could be a whole episode on its own.
Right.
Fake cautionary tales. So they're going across all the people who are going to essentially compete in the calf contest. I don't know. I guess they choose it basically on grooming and the size and all that kind of jazz. And she's the only girl, which I think is kind of great. Mm-hmm. But she did not raise this calf. She's doing it for her brother. So she's number 32. And here's a clip from it.
Hey, we made it to the finals, huh?
Well, of course we did. Albert raised a winner. Come on, Fagin. Come on.
And it's a very visual scene, which is why I went right to the fact that she was chosen.
Yes.
I need you to give me a hand, Pa. I gotta comb out his tail and polish his hooves one more time.
All right.
Aren't they having just a grand old time without Albert? Right? This is like, yeah. You win some, you lose some.
Right. Right.
And we see Albert in the background. The music in the background's fun. We know where it's a good carnival. This is a good one.
Yeah, we know because of the music, yeah.
Yeah, that's so we have a moment where Pa's kind of helping Laura and he spots this little sneak down the pathway. He sees Albert. So what does he do? He runs after him. Like he grabbed a purse. He's chasing him down through the streets of Manhattan trying to get back the purse.
Thank you.
And the way this is shot is so funny. It's a tilted camera, and the cameraman is running along with them, and it's like not on a stationary platform, so you have this whole craziness thing going on. It reminds me a little bit of the 1960s TV show Batman and Robin.
Like, yeah, a couple
the chaos.
Yeah, you know what? I feel almost certain that it's the same music they used during the Pearly Day horse race.
Yes, you know what? 100%. I couldn't agree more.
And another thing that I noticed was, you know, in the clips, cutting from Albert running past the food stalls to Pa, then back to Albert, then back to Pa again, they're just showing the same bit of film both times. Like, they really? they each pass the potatoes, onions, corn, etc. two times. So they
in
just
all
show
fairness,
it.
What other foods would they really have?
I know, potatoes, that's what onions, I was thinking. Corn. Yeah, I mean, in what is it? Sleepy Eye, right? Sleepy Eye,
yeah,
Fair?
Sleepy Eye, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, what do they really have besides, like, well, they don't even have pickles there. They don't even have those pickles. So
it's embarrassing, actually.
Yeah, it really
to
is.
To have a thing like this, no pickles? Come on.
Poor showing. Poor show.
Yeah. Like, you know what? If I cannot go to a fair and get a horseradish pickle, it's not a fair.
Right.
All right. So we have basically grabs him. He's like, why'd you leave?
Hold on, Albert. I got a few things to say to you.
We have Michael Landon come out of nowhere. It's like, what? Like, it's like one of those kind of like, how did you get over there?
He's yeah, like, in the back quote. Alley.
He's like a crocheted type of quilt behind him. That's kind of nice.
Yeah. Let me go. You got no right.
Oh, yes, I do. And we're going to have a talk now.
Oh, yeah. It's like a textile type of thing where you can buy all types of schmatas.
Right.
Now, you and me had a bargain and you didn't see your end through.
I was doing just fine.
Please tell me why you left.
I met a man in town. Offered me a job on the railroad. Promised to pay my way to San Francisco.
He's full of crap. He weighs 60 pounds. Nobody's hiring him.
That's the same thing that I thought. Like, that pipsqueak. And it's like, and I met a man in town. Like, what town? Hero Township? Like, Pa right. knows every man there, right? Like,
how much time has passed?
Right.
How much time do you think has passed between him leaving and this?
Like, a couple days.
Yeah, a couple, literally, right? Just
yeah, literally.
You're surprised he's not dead or something. Jeez. He probably has pockets of money and watches and all types of stuff he stole.
Yeah, like that old lady from the other fair. Remember with Mary and carrying the balloon? And there was that old lady pickpocket.
Yeah, that she was kind of my favorite.
Yeah, I love her.
So what do we have? We have a deal is struck. Stick around. Just see what happens. You raise the calf. Let's see if it actually, you know, wins, you know. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it loses, that way we can forget about you and you can move away and we never have to talk again. But this is Little House.
I have the names of the winners now.
There's a kid with this huge afro in the background, by the way. He's a blonde hair. He's got this huge
head
of hair. Right before he's standing right to the left of Michael Landon. What? This kid is crazy looking. He looks like Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Nice. But,
could have been.
Yeah.
He was third place.
Sorry, I just. And again, every single kid is blonde. Doesn't matter where you are. Except for Albert.
I have the names of the winners now. In third place. Number 41, owned by Rod Peterson of Sleepy Eye.
Better luck next year.
In second place, number 29, owned by Jesse Potter of Mankato. And now.
Can it happen? Will the dream come true?
Oh, this is great.
I know. I mean,
the prize winner, number 32.
There's only two people left, right?
Right. There's two people.
There's only one loser.
Yep.
So it's like between her and Almanzo or something, or Early Day.
Laura Ingalls of Walnut Grove. Congratulations, young lady. Would you like to say a few words?
Thank you, sir. But this honor really doesn't belong to me.
This would have been a good time for Harriet Tappanings to exist. She'd be like writing about this whole thing.
With her, her little press yeah. cap, or press hat awesome. That she wears. Yeah,
I love it.
I'd like to accept this award for my brother, Albert.
That's like eight people clapping, by the way.
Not, but they clap for like people. 2 minutes straight. Yeah, they clap forever.
Yeah. Is that hell?
Sure, San Francisco can't wait.
The weather in San Francisco is a lot better than Minnesota.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's... Well, you know, you're West Coast.
Reconsider, Albert.
You know what? Yeah, Albert, you know what? You head down to LA, you got In-N-Out Burger.
Like, yeah, you had that great job offer.
And Scientology. So. He's an ugly crier, too. He's
oh, God.
Now, that, I watched this until I got a lump in my throat while watching this. I thought this was very sweet. Him yeah. going and crying together. And it's all visual and... Oh, God. Didn't win the Nobel Prize. It's a calf. They are clapping for a long time.
Jesus.
Get a room. But yeah, when I watched it, yeah, all of you, get a room. This made me almost think like there's like more to it between these two, but there's not. Not going to go. Yeah, there.
They
not
do.
This I mean, episode.
Right. Yeah. This it's very strange for this episode. Although you know, in later episodes, you really do get a sense of the bond between them. I had told yeah. you privately that Albert isn't my favorite character, but you know, this episode in rewatching this episode, it really did get to me. You know, it really did. Yeah. Yeah, I have to admit, I got a little bit of a lump in my throat.
You have, that's his goal. I mean, it's Michael Landon. He's like, you know right. what I'm going to do to you? I'm going to make you cry today. And no, that's what he did.
He's the master. Yeah.
You know, if Michael Landon is crying, we have no right to not cry.
That's right. Yeah.
And he's crying right yeah. there. It's freeze framed right in front of me. But yeah, I mean, that's, he loves that. I mean, he loves these moments where this might have even been the part that he wrote the entire episode about.
Oh, it wouldn't surprise me. Yeah,
I really think that's how they wrote episodes. They were like, well, this is the sad scenario, or this mm-hmm. is what we're really, you know, this is the crux of it, and now we just have to create all the other junk,
right?
Yeah,
but what's interesting is the character, the actor who played Denzel. Mm-hmm. I looked him up. So his name is Craig Metzinger. And he's 15 years old here. So definitely a couple years older than Albert is supposed to be. And what's interesting about his resume was that he was in The Bionic Woman from 1976. And he was in the TV show Maude. But not much else. But those are his three big roles.
Yeah, I'm looking here. I'm always amazed by these careers that kind of, they get really big, or not even really big, but they do something. But he did 11 episodes of Maude, which yeah. is a tremendous TV show.
Right.
A TV show I never heard of course, Sarah. You know, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
But, yeah. you know, it's weird how these careers would kind of come and go, especially in the 70s. But, yeah, this was his last professional filming of anything
yeah.
that we know of. I hope Craig is okay out there.
I hope so.
Now, he's only 1 year younger than Alison Arngrim. I guess they would have made a very good match in the behind the school with the licorice.
Yeah, I mean, he just looks younger than 15 to me. He looks like he should be about Albert's age, except that Albert does look, as you mentioned, you know, very, very small, which to me makes sense, right? Like, he's been living on the streets, you know, he doesn't eat well probably unless he has, you know, steals something. So yeah. It all made sense in my head, except like Nellie looks to me, she looks like 17 here.
Yeah. And she's about that though. She's 16. Yeah. So also Craig was born in LA. So just like Long Island, when you're born on Long Island, you don't usually leave like I did.
Yeah.
And in LA, you kind of stay there.
That's true.
Or you move too, because a lot, you know, half the people were either born there or they move there.
Yeah.
But a lot of people stay in LA, so I bet he's still there.
Yeah, he might be my neighbor.
Or your gardener. No, I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, that seems to happen to a lot of the actors from the 70s, right?
Well,
they go on to something completely different.
Yeah. Rodimus Perra, who played John Edwards. You know, yes. He's living over in France now, and he had a very, very moving career, and he really left it to just go on a different venture. But he's one of those guys, he's such a nice guy, really great guy. Yeah. But it's just weird how, like, where these people end up, I guess, is the whole thing.
Yeah, so interesting. And as you say, you know, especially in, like, back in the 70s, and especially I think with, you know, young actors, children actors, not all of them really wanted to do acting forever, you know?
No.
So,
Matthew Labrador, for instance, you know, he does voiceover work and stuff, but he really just keeps himself pretty far away from the Little House on the Prairie craziness that is kind of popping up here and there.
And what's amazing to me is that even, you know, a lot of these actors from Little H on the P that, you know, didn't go on to continue acting, nevertheless, they were just so amazing in their roles. Mm-hmm. They did such a great job, you know, and like this wasn't even really like their life goal or life dream, but yet they did so wonderfully. I'm just always so impressed with Little House.
Yeah, I really enjoy watching the show still. You know, it can get a little bit much when you're watching so many of these emotional ones. But this one's a great episode. This one really kind of, this is what I would call a great first episode as well. If you're trying to get somebody to watch Little House, have them watch this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Paris, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come on here and talk to me about this episode. I want to just mention your podcast one more time. It's Class A Felons, B Cups, C Cups. And your name is Paris Brown. And I think you could I found it on iTunes. I'm sure you can find your podcast anywhere where podcasts can be found, but I'll put a link to it regardless. I also love the artwork that is associated with your podcast. It's really, it's a wonderful throwback to that, that 50s I Love Lucy vibe, or I don't know. It reminds me of, in the 90s, there was this resurgence of swing music, of like swing rock or something like that. Like rockabilly is what I'm thinking.
Yes. And the artist is so talented. She's she lives in Canada. Her name's Natalie Ratner, and her contact information is in the show notes of my podcast.
Oh, awesome. I'll dig that out too, so it can just be right there. But great. Paris, thank you. I hopefully I can entice you to come back on sometime in the near future. But this was a lot of fun. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Yeah, I would love to be back on, and it's been a pleasure, Mark. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting Walnut Grovecast by heading over to patreon.com/walnutgrovecast. Any support is appreciated.